I'll first give you just a brief description of my project, and then I will share with you some of the observations I made concerning the project. The project was my participation in 6 worship services at John Umstead Hospital, which, as most of you know, is one of the mental institutions here in this state. This is where I've been doing the basic unit of CPE this semester. And in these 6 services, I was responsible for preparing the orders of worship and preparing and delivering the sermons in 3 of the services, and in the others, I assisted another chaplain in the responsibilities. There's one thing that I feel that everyone should remember who attempts to do a worship service in a mental hospital or any other similar institution, and that is that mental patients are human beings in need of communion with God, just like everyone else in any worship service in any church on any given Sunday morning. It's important that we remember this. The late Ernest Bruder, who was for a long time director of Protestant Chaplain Service at the federal government's St. Elizabeth's Hospital, once said that the mentally ill, or he says the deeply troubled people, the mentally ill, are just like the rest of us, only more so. And what he simply means by this is that any abnormal, end quote, behavior that you find inside a mental hospital will be found outside the mental hospital. The only difference is that the abnormal behavior in the mental hospital is just more vividly expressed than it is on the outside. The leader of worship in a mental hospital should at all times maintain complete control of the worship service. Now, this includes a well-prepared and simple to follow order of worship that should be printed up and distributed to the congregation with specific instructions as to the parts of the worship service in which the congregation is to participate. There should be nothing at all left to chance. So if you want the Spirit to lead your worship service, please see that He does so while you're making the preparation. Because if you wait until you get into the service and want the Spirit to lead you, you'll probably find that another spirit has already moved the patient. And I'll share with you some of this in a little bit. There are frequent distractions in a worship service of this nature. They're minor distractions and some more severe distractions. And only by being in complete control of the worship service can the leader of worship allow these distractions to come about without interrupting the worship service. And by minor distractions, I mean such things as members of the congregation exiting the sanctuary before the service is over, getting up and moving from one seat to another for no apparent reason, talking between members of the congregation, and occasionally maybe a member of the congregation asking the leader of worship to repeat a hymn number that he's already announced twice. And then there are the more, what I call, severe distractions. And believe me, you have to be in complete control of everything, or these severe distractions will cause interruptions in the service. And I'll share with you a couple of my experiences here. The first sermon I preached at Umstead Hospital, I had just completed the sermon, and we had the closing hymn, which was not a hymn of invitation. Believe me, don't give a hymn of invitation in a mental hospital. As the other chaplain told me, if I chose to do so, he'd exit the side door and let me handle it. But anyway, during the closing hymn, a lady got up from her seat and came down and very calmly knelt down front a few feet to my right and began praying aloud. And then all of a sudden she just fell back, flat of her back, with arms and legs sprawled in every direction. And finally another patient who was sitting near the front got up and helped the patient to her feet and back to her seat. But then the most severe distraction I've ever had is one that I'll remember as long as I live. And it was the second sermon I preached there. I had made some point within my sermon that had gone rather well with one of the patients sitting near the front. And to voice his agreement for the point I had just made, he shouted loudly, "You're damn right!" And needless to say, this caused somewhat of a distraction and an interruption for me. My first impulse was to laugh. I knew if I laughed, that'd be the end of the service. So I took a short pause and allowed the congregation to settle down from it and continued on with the worship service without too much of an interruption. Another thing that is important to in a worship service in a mental institution is to have as much congregational participation as possible. Mental patients have a short attention span, and the more they can be actively involved in the worship service, the longer you can keep their interest on the theme of worship. The participation of the congregation in the service should be stated clearly and simply within the order of worship so that they will have no trouble at all following and coming in at the exact time they're supposed to. In the worship services that we did, we had the usual congregational participation with the hymns and responsive greetings, but in addition to this, we included at least two fully written sermons within the order of worship service, which the congregation all said in unison. And this seemed to work pretty well. They didn't always stay in unison, but certainly they were able to follow along, and most of them seemed to enjoy this participation. And finally, I want to speak more specifically to preparing and delivering a sermon within this type of worship service. A sermon, above all, should be short because of the short attention span. 10 to 15 minutes is a good limit here. The language of the sermon should always be picturesque. It should use simple words and short, straightforward statements. A simple, real-to-life story that you can relate to the congregation from your own personal experience is usually an excellent sermon illustration. But there's one thing you should avoid here, and that is don't use a story concerning one of the patients in the hospital, because as sure as you do, either he or one of his friends will recognize it, and that can always come back with some kind of problem. The sermon shouldn't be exegetical, not at all if possible. And it should above all relate to their needs where they are in the present. And the sermon should never give the congregation any type of false hope. If you can recognize their present needs, as many of those as are common to the largest percentage of the congregation, and speak to these needs without creating in them the idea that God is going to perform some miraculous transformation from their present situation, then the sermon will be meaningful and shouldn't cause any problems that you'd have to deal with later on a one-to-one basis. These are all the comments I have prepared. If you have a few questions, I think we have 2 or 3 minutes.
As that which is unreal being used to portray that which is more real with greater reality. Think about that for a few minutes. We take an artificial situation, which we create, that which is unreal. We use it to portray some aspect of reality in such a way that the heart of that reality comes alive for us. So I think that the definition, while it is a bit circular, does speak really to the heart of what drama is. Drama has many, many expressions, and we'll talk about some of these in dealing with how to use drama in the church. But first of all, let's think in terms of some of the technical aspects of drama. What does it take to have drama? Well, it takes two things. A script, which may be written, planned, bought, borrowed, or stolen, or just made up at the spur of the moment. It takes a script of some form. Second thing it takes is an actor. If you put those two together, you'll come up with some form of drama. Now, actually, the word drama has been borrowed and used in many aspects of life so that we talk about the drama in this situation or that. But what we're doing is we're picturing it in our mind as that which has enough action to catch the eye and convey meaning. So all we're doing is borrowing the more technical sense of drama and putting it into another situation. So drama doesn't necessarily mean a cast of thousands with a book-type manuscript and all the costs and problems that are involved. It is simply the use of action, and if you remember, the word theater is not the word auditorium. Theater is a place where you see. And so action is the primary thing of drama. And much drama has no sound at all. It is done purely with action. So the key thing that's involved is some idea to be communicated, someone to communicate it, and people to see that it is communicated. Drama is not complete without the audience. Okay. Techniques for producing drama, gracious. We could spend years on that. But what I want to do with you for just a moment is to suggest that within your church, if you're thinking in terms of traditional drama, and we'll start off thinking that way, that you have lots of opportunities. Let's suppose that you have a church and the only situation that you have for producing drama is the sanctuary, which is probably the worst place in the world to produce it. Because the sanctuary is generally set up as an auditorium, not a theater, which means that the people are generally too far back and too scattered out to really see with intimacy what is happening. A second reason is because the sanctuary is designed for worship in a particular style, generally with the raised platform, the choir behind, no exits or entrances, and all the problems that are involved. But drama can be done there if, in fact, you are creative in the type of drama that you select. It would be very difficult for you to produce Gone with the Wind in a church auditorium, but to do a little rendition of Jonah and the whale, involving maybe only Jonah and a couple of people serving as a chorus background, the drama could be performed very easily there. Now, let's move on into another avenue which would be more adaptable. If you happen to have a great big Sunday school room or a fellowship hall, big enough, say, to put 50, 60, 100 people, whatever you're trying to accommodate, in there, then I would suggest that you think in terms of doing drama with central staging. If you were here for JB, the play which we did last fall here, then you have some concept of central staging. It simply means that the audience surrounds the stage. That eliminates the problems of your building a theater in your church. So, technically, all you need is a focal point for your actors to perform, a place for your audience to be gathered, and some sort of a logical arrangement around that acting area, and some sort of avenues for entrances and exits. Now, that's not a terribly expansive requirement. Most any church can come up with some room that has a flat floor, a place for folks to sit around, and some place that you can hopefully add a little bit of lighting. Some of the key technical aspects of drama which need to be considered when you're going to use drama in your church, in the traditional sense of producing a show, is first of all the acting area, and secondly lighting for that acting area. Lighting is your single best delineator of space. If, in fact, we've tried to put on a drama right here, your attention will be all over this room. It'll be unfocused, although the room is shaped to focus your attention here. And even now, you're having trouble focusing your attention on me because it's a distraction over here. And that would be no problem at all if I could put them in the dark and me in the light. You wouldn't have any choice. You'd have to look at what you could see. That's what lighting is for in its first and most primary sense in the theater. It is to illuminate and let you see what the producer of the show wants you to see. So, for church lighting, here's what I would suggest if you're doing theater in the round. I would suggest that beside your audience, at key places, that you simply establish some light poles. A nice little cross work of two befores nailed onto one upright with a bar across the top, and some of these $3 to $6 floodlight, outdoor floodlight mounts hung at the top will serve beautifully for stage lighting. You can buy both floods and spotlights. The spots generally work better. They don't spread out so much. And these can be used with your stage lighting simply with plugs, on and off switches, or more preferably with dimmers. Now, courses can be taught in lighting. I only want to give you just about three things to remember. One, situate your lighting, position it, so that the lighting does not blind your audience. It is there for them to see, not for them to be seen. That's a cardinal rule. Okay? Secondly, always cross light and angle light. Now, I'll try to illustrate that. If, in fact, I want to light this stage area, I won't put a bank of lights over here with all the light coming this way, because if all the light were behind me, all you would see would be my shadow. You wouldn't have any concept at all of what my face looked like. But if lighting comes from all directions, is cross-lighted, then no matter where you're sitting around me, I will be illuminated properly. So you cross-light. By angle lighting, I mean that looking at the stage floor as being here, and an actor standing here, then instead of your lighting being above his head to shine down, which makes grotesque shadows, then make sure that your lighting comes in from an angle. 45 degrees, that ain't even 45, believe me, but preferably 45 degrees. That's the most pleasing angle for lighting. Okay? Those simple little rules will help. The other thing is that your lighting should be remembered as communication. It is there to help you tell your story. If you are doing the story of the Christmas Eve pageant, and I hope you can be creative enough to do something other than Christmas pageants in your church with drama, but if you're stuck with that and you're doing a Christmas pageant and you're doing the scene out there at night with the shepherds in the field, and you light them with a nice warm yellow spotlight, it's going to look like you're giving them a sun bath. But if you use a nice blue light with a bit of red in it to keep them alive as well as cool, then you will be able to communicate the fact that it's a cool night and they're outside. So your lights talk. They talk with their intensity, with their direction, and with their color. Okay? That's enough about lighting for the moment. The next aspect of the technical putting together of drama that's of cardinal importance is costuming. If your costume is merely suggestive, that's fine. You don't have to create elaborate costumes to do drama, but you do have to consider costuming. Now, we can do drama with no costuming, with no makeup, with no lighting, and in a few minutes I'll try to show you a little bit of how that might go. But if you're talking about traditional theater and you're going to put a show together, then costuming is important. If you go to the closet and you pull out the bathrobes and you put them on the kids and you line them up around a wooden cradle in the middle of the floor, you're going to look like you've got a bunch of kids around a wooden cradle wearing bathrobes. Now, if you're going to have costumes. It's no problem at all for your people, the women in your church, and some of the men who may sew, to buy cheap material because it's going to be seen from a distance, dye that stuff at home, and sew it together in clothing that is very, very close to clothing of biblical times because it was very simple garments. So you can look in some historical costuming books that you can find in most any local library. You can look at your pictures that you have available from the Sunday school board, and you can put together some costumes that are a whole lot better than bathrobes. Okay? Another thing is always consider costuming from head to toe. If you have Joseph come on the scene wearing his liquid crystal quartz watch and a set of rings and all the adornments of modern day time, it's going to be very difficult for your audience to believe he's really Joseph out there with the cold night and a wife about to give birth. So you have to remember detail, total costume. Got to leave that one. Makeup. When you're doing makeup, there's several approaches to it. I would suggest one of two. Either use almost no makeup at all, or go with it all the way. Makeup, which simply is taking someone's pancake and smearing it on somebody else's face, just so you can say you've got makeup on, will only wash away features. It will do nothing. It will hurt far more than it helps. The reason that we have makeup is twofold, basically. The first reason for having makeup is for corrective makeup. If I take any one of you and stand you under a bright light, your features will disappear right off of your face because the shadows that normally distinguish you are washed away. The lighting which is necessary for you to see creates that problem. Corrective makeup counteracts for that and causes you to see under the lights a normal human being. Now to do that, you have to counteract for the yellowness of lights and add back in the pinks into the color. You have to counteract for shadows by adding in shadows and highlights on the face so that the face is sculptured back into a normal face. The second and most creative reason for makeup is when you have to build a character. Now what you're seeing over here is just that. You saw a very young man come in and sit down in this room. And he has aged considerably since he's been sitting here. Now it's unfair for you to examine him under fluorescent lighting because he's been made up to be under stage lighting, which would serve the purpose of washing out the harshness of his makeup and giving it a more believable appearance. If you want to get some idea of how realistic he would look, squint your eyes so you can just barely see through them and take a look at him. Stand back a little bit, Bobby, so they can see him. And what you'll catch will be the highlights and the shadows, delineating areas. The beard, of course, gives a total different character makeup. The coloring of the hair, the aging and all picks up, and you can get a pretty good idea of who he is. Now, he can walk on the stage with that makeup, however, and be the youngest guy in the world if he comes strutting across that stage. But if he begins to before you to slow and age a bit and his voice trembles a little as he talks, it won't be too difficult for you to have him as an older character as he talks to you. A great deal of it, you see, has to come into building the character, so it can't all be done with makeup and costume. We'll come back in a few minutes after Bobby finishes with him and let him tell you a little bit about what he's done with makeup. Okay, we've covered lighting, staging, costume, and makeup. I don't believe that. What I want us to do now is to look at some applications of drama in the church. And to do that, you're going to have to sort of get your mind out of gear from where I've come so far. Drama doesn't have to mean all this elaborateness of drama. So let's look at this outline. I have a few minutes and follow it. I'll try to get on here so you can have some question and answer times about drama in the church. First of all, we've been talking about outright drama, as you think of traditional drama, the use of drama in the church. If you're going to go to the trouble of doing drama production in the church, then there's several things you must have to start with. One is willing people. Nobody in the world can go into a church and force them to do drama. But if you have one key person who has drama experience or willingness to learn, and you've got somebody from the outside that can teach, if that one person can take on the role of producer and director, and you have a group who are willing then to work with them, the rest of it can be learned. It's not a foreign art. Bobby had never done makeup until last fall. And he's doing a superb job over there of doing very, very difficult creative makeup. So in just the practice he gained in one semester last fall, he's come that far. I think that's pretty remarkable myself. It tells you this, it can be done. So, if you want to do drama in the church and you're going to have drama production, plan on making it worth your while. Don't just do a one-night stand. Have a season of drama. Have at least a week of drama so that you can run the thing enough to where you can involve the community and other churches and use it for what it's worth. Pull your people together with it. If it's just one little group that's going to come and do their one-night fling, it's going to be very difficult to justify the expense and the trouble of a full, outright drama effort. Okay? And we'll say some more about this when we get over to cost and so forth in a few minutes. Now, teaching with drama. It's very possible for you to teach by using drama. And this is an excellent way to introduce drama to your church. One of the things I found particularly useful is to get a group of kids together or adults together. Take a particular passage of Scripture, help them to exegete that passage, help them to do a good exposition of that passage, and then let a drama grow out of that passage. Let me give you an example. And I did this myself one Sunday night in place of a sermon not too long ago. Took the story of Samuel. Samuel's got a good beginning point and a good ending point, so it makes a nice drama. But if you'll take the story of Samuel and remember the lad, he comes in to Eli, picking up at the point of the old man is settling down to go to rest. He comes in to talk to Eli and to tell him about hearing this voice, you know, that he doesn't quite understand. Visions were strange, it says, in those days. We understand that. At any rate, Samuel comes again and again to Eli. You remember the account. In the course of the event, Eli is told that his sons are to be destroyed, that his house is to be destroyed. And Eli responds with that classical statement about, if it seems good to the Lord, it's good to me. Something which we could stand to learn. Well, what I did with that was to do a one-actor show, namely me. For my stage, I used the church auditorium. I set up a table, a small low table, and covered it with a sheet. That was my rock bed. The next thing I did was to take a candle arbor and arrange it so it was like a menorah with the seven candles across it. Seven candles lighted. So when the show started, all I had was the blue light on that stage. I had on a old age makeup and came in and hobbled onto the stage and went through the processes of trying to be an old man for them for a while to get my audience with me. Sat down on that counter and started mumbling about being a priest and some of the problems that were coming and going in that day. Now by the end of the first 5 minutes, I had recounted how Samuel came to be with me. I had set the stage for Eli to be a person who was so old that he was blind by my fumbling around and not being able to find things. Then how do you handle the second person coming in? Simple. You can do it several ways. One, you could do it as a series of prayers that would indicate the presence of the boy having been there. I chose to do it more directly. I would simply be awakened by a sound which I would hear, which the audience never heard. The boy coming in, listening to the boy, he didn't say a word, but I would encourage him on by saying, and what else did he say? What did you hear? You know, the one-sided dialogue which indicates the other side. The boy came three times and then left, and the old man finally ends up by going over and putting out the candles one at a time and praying that God will not take his light away from Israel, regardless of the cost. Now, it was a very effective little drama, although my description of it leaves a lot to be desired. The point is, I didn't write it. It was written by a study group of my people who sat down and analyzed that scripture and put it together. All I did was perform it. So it was not just a performance, it was an outright teaching experience that they had to examine the scripture, they had to understand what the passage said, not only what it said, but what it meant, and put it into a drama that would communicate to the whole church. It was a very effective exercise. I enjoyed it too. That's just one aspect. Drama can be used as role-playing to teach. If you have a situation, a passage you're trying to act out, get your group together, set the parameters, and let them act it out. It may go totally astray of what the particular passage you're working with goes. But then you can sit down and discuss how it went astray, and you have something to work off of as a discussion starter. So drama can definitely be used as teaching. Drama as preaching is one of the funnest forms of drama for those of us who are interested in preaching. If you occasionally wonder if your people don't get tired of watching you stand up in front of them and proceed with a service every week with absolutely no variety in presentation and method, the answer is yes, they do. They get tired of that. And if you can offer something to draw their interest for a while and understand that they can participate more fully in worship, then you can preach with drama. Let me give you some illustrations. Former student here, Rick Wilson, who's down in South Carolina now, got turned on to this idea of using drama in his church. And so one Sunday morning, he had someone take over the service as if he were out, as if he were away. And they were having the preliminaries for the service, and all of a sudden he comes busting into the back of the church in clown makeup, fully decked out in clown makeup, and says, "Hey, what's going on here? Is this a carnival?" And, you know, just absolutely wiped the church out. And he and the person who was in the pulpit began a dialogue about the meaning of the church and Christianity. And it just absolutely caught his congregation. And they completely got involved with trying to defend what the church was and explain what it is to this clown. And the person standing up at front went ahead and just one at a time became moderator as the people answered for him what was going on. Now that's preaching through drama. That's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it that I have used is to sit down and actually put on makeup in front of a congregation. It's the sort of thing that would lose its interest if it were repeatedly done with the same congregation. I know it was a number of times in different congregations I have sat down with a makeup mirror in front of me, built the beard, the whole makeup, and put on a face of Christ, and then stand up and deliver the Sermon on the Mount in first person. It's different when the person standing in front of you doesn't talk about Jesus but says, you know, to you, "Blessed are you," and speaks to you in the first person. And finally ends that up by saying, "Come and follow me." You know, first person encounter. That's what drama and preaching can do for you. Another aspect, and less dramatic in the sense that preaching can be drama, is simply doing first person sermons. If you have a particular passage in the Bible that you want to try to communicate the meaning of it to your people, how about picking out a particular character who may or may not have ever been there and letting him tell the story? For instance, the little boy who was there that day that got the loaves and the fishes. And I was walking out one day going up on the mountain. There's lots of folks up there. And I was down walking on the wall by the sea and saw all the folks up there. I thought, hey, that would be fun. I think I'll go up there. Well, I started up, but then I saw these nice little round rocks and I picked them up and skipped them out across the water. Six. You ever get them through six times? Well, at any rate, when I got up there and I sat down, this man was talking, and he just talked and talked and talked, and all the people got so excited about what he was saying, they forgot to eat. I even forgot to eat, and I had a lunch my mommy had fixed for me. Well, you know, after a while, this man told these folks, he said, why don't you just go out there and feed them people? Well, I didn't know what to do. I had my lunch already. But one of those disciples got to looking at me and eyeing my lunchbox. I thought he's going to take it. I just hit it right good. And then I got to thinking, now, I wonder what this fella could do. And I said, here's my lunch. You can have it. And the disciple grabbed it up all excited like and went running over to Jesus. And then he realized how dumb he looked with those few little fishes and all them people out there. Now, I put to you this. I don't have time to finish my story. That will communicate. That'll communicate. You don't mind making a fool of yourself and being silly. People can learn the gospel firsthand. Okay. Preaching is drama. Drama has a side effect in your church. And here is my vote for full-blown drama in the church. If you have a church with carpenters, with seamstresses, with electricians, or jack-of-all-trades types that are good at many of these things. If you have Sunday school classes that can take on projects, you can involve every last aspect of your church in doing a drama production. You can have one class responsible for one thing and one for another. Now, somebody's got to be coordinating this and making a go of it. But you can pull the whole church together with the functions being assigned throughout all the extremities of the church. Perhaps you've been wondering how you could unify your church. Now, this is one way. Give them a project. Help them to understand the importance of it, what they're trying to do. Make it reach out beyond their church by all means so that you're going to be involving the community in your season of drama and drawing your people in. Help them to understand the importance of giving by the aspect of contributing to help bring the things together that you don't have to do it. And have your whole church pulling together as a unit. Now the secret to this is, if one small group does drama in the church, it's their thing. But if you involve everybody in the church in doing it, you're going to have a full house, a happy full house. You're going to have a group of people who gather because they've been talking to their neighbors about what they've been doing and about how they've been learning to put makeup. And you hear some big burly guy standing up there talking about how he's been learning to put his makeup on, and folks are going to come see. If you have people actively involved in doing drama in the church, there's a decided side effect, and that is that your church will find this structure pulling it together for the project for one time and for the future. It has a very, very helpful effect in this way. Okay, I'm going to come back and get questions in just a few minutes, okay? So hang on to it. The last aspect is, how much does it really cost to do drama? Well, some of these things are shoestring operations. Didn't cost a thing for you to stand up there and do a first-person story. If you're wanting to do full drama, here is some idea of what it's going to cost. First go-round, setting up, if you have available to you seats that you can arrange and some sort of risers, then your major expense is behind you. If not, then the building of some sort of platforms to elevate so your audience can see and make this a theater could be a pretty expensive proposition, several hundred dollars if you build it even yourself. So that's one thing you'll have to consider, preparing an auditor, a theater. All right, the next aspect of it is what you're going to do with lighting. Now, I would suggest that probably the single best investment you'll make long term in terms of technical investment in your drama is in lighting. Lighting will turn that show into a reality quicker than anything else, given everything else being in order. In other words, if the acting and all is there. because it will delineate the area of acting, it will focus attention as it should be, and will give atmosphere and mood that makes drama drama. So lighting equipment need not be expensive. You can buy a 6-circuit dimmer board, an Act 2 dimmer board, prepackaged and made, or make it up yourself using these little household dimmers together. The only advantage of the prepackaged job is it has a master on it, so you can control them all at one time. That unit's available for less than $300 and would last you for ages and ages and ages and ages. So if you're talking about building a drama program in your church, that's a worthwhile investment. So that's expensive. And you don't have to have that to start. You can buy 6 dimmers down here for $4 a piece. For $24, you can have a dimmer board with no mastering if you have an electrician in your church. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to cut corners. Lighting you can build. Buy a spotlight, take some stove pipe, fix it to a board, nail it on there so that you have a snood on there to direct the light, and a socket up inside, and screw it in, and you've got a plug, which will work.
Make sure to vent it.
Yeah, thank you, Lonnie. You do have to drill holes around the thing, or it gets very, very hot, and the bulb will break in it, which is distracting in the middle of a joke. Okay, the next aspect of cost primary is in makeup. $25 to $50 worth of makeup will make up many, many, many shows. It only takes probably $2-3 worth of makeup for a show, but to get the variety of materials that you need to work with, you're going to need to invest probably close to $50. Now, you can use makeup right out of the ladies' shelves at home and get them to contribute this, but some things will be missing that you will need for a good show. If you're doing beards, you need to buy the crepe hair like he's done here. The shading materials, the powders and so forth that are designed for drama work best for drama rather than trying to adapt makeup from the home makeup kit. And finally, costuming generally is something you don't put a big investment in. You just build it up as you go and let people contribute the materials for the costumes they're making, or groups do this together. So drama need not be a terribly expensive thing. If you can put $500 in a budget for a year for drama, you can begin an investment in drama, which if you'll add a couple hundred dollars to a year, by your fourth or fifth year, you can have a major drama department in your church, as long as you have the interested and willing bodies. There's a wonderful resource of materials in terms of books which are available. Books like this one on stage makeup, which a novice could sit down with and work his way through and end up doing makeup like this. It's a step-by-step procedure, complete with a series of color plates in the back that even tell you about colors and give examples of all kinds of makeup, all sorts of historical makeup, everything available, an excellent resource. There are books on directing. There are books on stage design and lighting. I've done nothing on sets today because I've tried to push you in the area of no-set shows, where the sets are simply the chairs and things you immediately use rather than building up huge walls and sets. That gets expensive. But all of this is resources that are available. You can go to the bookstore, and these books are available even over there. There's a shelf of them. Or you can buy much cheaper books, which are much more narrow in their focus and context, through the Baptist bookstore and other places like this. Well, I could go for a long, long time, so let's hush and see what your questions are. You had a question ready to go. It's a problem in itself. You're not going to write your own. And one of the places would be places like Baker, Samuel French, Contemporary Drama Service. That's a few. These are available. You can go to your local library and get addresses on any of these. There are a whole long list of places where plays are available. I would highly encourage you, if you have talent in your church, to encourage it in terms of playwriting. But don't trade off quality to satisfy somebody's urge to be a playwright. You know, if you're starting off with a piece of trash, you're going to end up, no matter how much work you put in it, with a piece of trash. So you must be willing to say, this simply is not the quality we need for production, and have that understanding before people volunteer to write the play.
That was a general rule. You try to fill out some of your people in the church, and the church has never had strong before you came in and
fine. Full blown.
Because there are always other people in there who just are not
willing. Do you, as pastor, know the temperature of your church? And in some churches, that sort of a stunt would cause mass hysteria and you would never accomplish anything. So a pastor has to understand the temperature of his church and the temperament of the church, really, is what I should be saying. But most churches will vote for success. Most churches will vote for success. So if you have something that is quality, even the surprise of it will soon give away to the pleasure of something refreshing and different, which is an important aspect. If it's well done, you can get away with it. A lot of people talk about having to work drama into the church. That's generally not my approach, but that's because of my background in drama. And I'm pretty sure when I start out what I'm going to end up with. So I come on pretty strong with it, you know, just simply dumping in as an alternative to worship, and it's there. And haven't really caused any bad problems with that. But now, you know, the thing that generally has your people turned off is they think of drama in terms of bathrobes and Christmas pageants, and so they've never seen the church do anything creative with drama. But the church has now pretty well overcome its taboos on drama. And so as long as it does eventuate in something which is worshipful and an educational as well as a religious or ecstatic experience involved with it, the people welcome. Other questions? Bobby, you want to tell us a little bit about what you have done over here? Introduce your person and your character.
This is Kenneth Vance. Do you know Kenneth?
New Kenneth.
New Kenneth. About all I've done was I just used a dark base on him, and then I found that works better for aging. Then as soon as I put the base on, I used the crepe hair. You want to always be sure to straighten out your crepe hair. If you've never done this before, you won't understand what I'm talking about. If you have, you think I'm crazy. So if anybody's interested in knowing how to put on beards, I'll be glad to do you. This was my profession, sort of. I was a barber in men's hairstyles, so the beard was sort of one of those things that I just did naturally. Tim and Jim Rivers are going to taught me how to do the makeup. I've highlighted this person. Well, first of all, I've drawn dark lines on him, in which you can't see from up there. And always do the dark up. And whenever you put the white highlight on him, it sort of goes under the line. That way it looks like a wrinkle. And from there, it probably doesn't look like a wrinkle. And under these lights, I'm sure it doesn't. But under the eyes, it's supposed to sort of be a bagging effect, which would look that way under a light. And about the most, I guess the most difficult thing is learning how to draw the lines. You can do this with eyebrow pencil. For the last play we did, which some of you probably saw, we used the eyebrow pencil. It's a lot easier and a lot quicker. This takes about an hour and a half. And this is not really good the way it ought to be. After you get through with it, you always put the powder on. And this keeps it looking a lot better and keeps it coming off. We use pancake makeup. Some of you probably have already used grease paint. You're welcome to look at him, and I'll be glad to. I mean, close, you know. You see a lot of mistakes when you look at him close. But that way, and if you're interested in learning how to put on beards, I'll be glad to tell any of you now.
You know, if you're doing makeup, the same thing goes for that went for costume. You cover anything that shows. If hands stick out and aren't wearing gloves, they have to be made up. Quickly, I wanted to show you one other thing before you left. Makeup can become a very complicated process. When we did JB and we had to come up with his burned face, we did a complete casting of Steve's face before we started. And then actually took modeling clay and built up the wounds and the sores on his face, and then poured cast which fit over that, keys like this, and then poured cast over that, then we took out, we dug the clay out, poured this full of latex, and formed prosthetic pieces that would be glued on his face every night. So it can become a very, very technical art, a very complicated thing. This is simply to give you an idea of some of the art and what's involved with it. For your church, painting with, sculpturing with paint, as it's called, will accomplish most anything you'd want to do. This stuff is up here if you want to come look at it.